Hey, Jason.
Hey, Mallory.
How's it going?
It's going all right. Nice to hear that as barely holding it together as it seems that from a certain perspective, it actually looks like this is going well. So that's heartening.
Yeah, I think,
Hey, guys.
hey, Jakob.
How are you?
And they were just they were super excited about how the project came together, and of course they would like future releases to be less exciting than that. And I was like, trust me, we agree, just in terms of like tight timelines and stuff like that. But I don't, now that we've implemented it, won't be like that for future, so that's good. And yeah, they were pretty psyched, I guess. They were telling us about like how they had an internal project that ran like 10 months over and like $1.5 million over like budget and all this stuff. And they were like, so this project completing like on time and within budget was like really exciting for
You mean we could
them.
have taken a couple extra months and leaked another $500,000 and they would have been cool with it? Ah.
I mean, I wish, yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, I don't know what that other project was. They weren't airing all
Well,
of their dirty laundry, but just some of it. But yeah, generally like just really, really happy, and that was encouraging. So
good to know.
yeah. Let's see here. I don't think we're expecting anyone else necessarily. Jakob, I'm still waiting to hear back about this local IDs in the holdings. And Deanna said she was going to write me an email last week and hasn't, so I don't know what's going on there. I'll try to bug her tonight about that.
Okay. Does she understand the issue?
Yeah, she had to like talk to somebody who was like in charge of the who's in charge of the ANBD, and like I think what she was conveying in the last meeting was that they essentially probably want to send the entirety of that field and let the library like parse it however they want. And which I don't know, like some of those 850 subfield Bs are really ugly. Like I don't have an example here, so I don't know if they I think they just don't want to get into the business of trying to figure out how to identify exactly what to send through. So they thought maybe we should just send everything. But I want to get that in writing from them because it was not super clear.
Yeah, that's not gonna work. I mean, we know. I don't think they know what they're talking about. Yeah, as you say, this field is trash, basically. You know, it has some OAI identifiers, which I assume is because they run some OAI harvests when they ingest into ANBD. So that's not gonna work for sure. But I'm more concerned about the case when it's empty. Because when it's empty, we fall back on the ANBD ID.
Yeah.
So they're gonna have hard time, especially for Alma, because we don't care in Richard, right? But in Alma, they're gonna have a hard time configuring that locate.
Yeah, I think that they go into that locate failed like status. Like, I think that's even in Alan's documentation. Let me see if I can pull that up.
You don't have to do it now, but just so you know that there is a big issue there. I mean, it's like depending on the holding, it will send one or the other. And there isn't really a good way for us to to fix that.
Yeah, this
Maybe we should,
I guess
I'm thinking that maybe we should not bother at all and always send the INVD ID. And maybe if it's present, if that local identifier is present, then maybe ingested in the into the metadata, that's this bibliographic record identifier. Maybe
Like
that's not
just
it.
add it to a different like field.
Yeah. Some sort of system identifier field or whatever. But
Yeah.
yeah. But whatever we do, we need to have some consistency there, because right now it's doing different things depending on how the data is, whether the data is there or not, which is just it's confusing. Yeah, it is
Yeah.
confusing. I wouldn't be surprised if some of those failures that we have, like you see those some of those failures when Alma reports an error without any details, is actually caused by this.
Yeah, I've spoke to them on that, and I haven't heard. They didn't respond to my message about the one that was having the issue. I'm concerned in that case that the issue is that the agency ID value was sending the child NUC, so ANL colon NED, and I think that they are using only one like reshare, I'm sorry, one ALMA endpoint, and so I wonder if Alma didn't have both the parent and child NUC like configured as symbols, and that might be why it got rejected. Because
Yeah, it could be.
we can configure those local symbols, but I don't know if they can, you know. So I asked them about that, like if there's a way to configure more than one symbol.
Yeah, could be different failures for different cases. Problem is that there's no details, right? So you never know. It's a guesswork. Yeah.
Yeah, I know the Alma stuff has been really cool and they're excited about it, but it's kind of like a black box like half the time, and it's hard not having a, I wish we could have an Alma sandbox play with. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll see if they ever say anything about this, or I'll try to see if they had any more thoughts about it. But I can try to explain, like, if we send that whole field, that's going to be not, that's not actually going to help anything in the long run. So maybe we'll just continue sending the ANBD and stick the 850B into a different bib field. I don't think Adam's here. No. Okay. And this all looks okay. Yep, Ian's out. All right. Jakob, I'm still trying to confirm this one. G did like show me that they got this in the sandbox that they tested with. But she didn't like explicitly say like, yes, let's load this into prod. So I'm gonna just confirm that they're fine. Like she just sent me a screenshot of how it looks in Alma, which I assume is preferred over not having anything there. But
She did send you a screenshot.
yeah, let me show you. Or maybe I can just put it into this ticket. One sec. Wow. I must not be firing all cylinders yet this morning. Sorry. So it puts it in first. It's the first thing they see in the note. So I assume that's going to be sufficient. But can you see it, Jakob?
Oh yeah, I can see it. Yeah, it doesn't show the new lines. So that's why it's like one big string for them. But yeah, there's nothing we can do about this. So okay, yeah, let's push that to prod. I don't see any issues, but then there's this other ticket. This delivery cost. I pushed out to task this morning.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it would be best if you tested it. I have a feeling that this is not gonna work like we expect it to work, but let's see. So
Okay.
the way this works right now is that we simply transfer that value to the offered cost fields. Right. So if they sent a request, if they fell with a and set the delivery cost, normally we would ignore that. Is that correct, Jason? Do we do anything with the delivery cost field in Reacher?
We do not.
Okay. Yeah. So we would just ignore that field, right? And since they have no way of setting the offered cost, it would kind of go unnoticed for us, so the broker is going to transfer that value into from Alma only, of course. And if it's not set, it's going to transfer it over to the offered cost field so that Reacher can see it. And I also added that cost that we kind of debated over to do the inverse. So when the message from Reacher goes out and it's got the offered cost field set, and there's no delivery cost, so there won't be because Reacher doesn't use it, then that field's gonna be set as well. So they should be able to see that cost on the supply message now. So maybe what we did with the with like previously, if you recall, Mallory, we did something to append the cost to the condition, right? To the node fields for the cost conditions, because otherwise they couldn't see it. So maybe
Right.
now they will be able to see it. But I don't know, actually, maybe you do, whether they can set that field, the delivery cost, for any kind of message. Is that something that they set on the request, or is that only possible to set on when they ship?
I think it's the supplier, and I'm not sure they can send out any kind of message.
No, but I mean, like, if in Alma specifically,
Oh.
if they set it, like, do you know how do they set it? Where is that field? Where is that field in the form?
When they're the requester, when
No, when
Alma's the
they.
requester,
No,
or when the.
when they're a supplier.
Yeah, it's just in the. It's like in the request form in Alma. Like they have like six cost fields that they can populate. And I think they've just decided that they're going to use the delivery cost field because that one they could configure some default values for.
Yeah. So they set it on the request, and that's it, right? It's not like they set it while the message goes out. They just
Yeah,
set it on the request.
I don't think it's part of like the loan process. I think they could set it at any point.
Got it. Okay. Well, if that's the case, then we should actually see that field getting transferred to the offered cost always. So like no matter what message they're gonna send, if it's like the will supply, or if it's even a notification and it actually also takes that field, it will just send it over always. And if it reads it, then it will show it now also always, right? Because Reacher doesn't send it as part, like the offered cost is part of that negotiation process, so it usually gets sent with the expect to supply message or a notification message, depending if add a condition later or you supply with condition. So that's gonna get transferred, and I think that then they should see it in the request. object, like in the request view, right after we send it. But it'll be best if you verify that, to be honest. So if you can get on a call with Alan or Tim or somebody from Trove, just play with it.
Yeah. I've been having difficulties chasing Alan down. We've been trying to reschedule a meeting since Sunday night. So I think he's like having a crazy week. So I'm trying to get with him. But maybe I can just sync up with Tim. I know that the Alma sandboxes got wiped out on August 4th or something, the first Sunday of the month. So I might have to make sure he reconfigures the broker. And if not, I'll see if Trove has a sandbox partner they can also test with. But I don't know anyone in, like, I don't have any direct contact with any of their partners, like the Alma ISO sites for Trove. So, but yes, I agree. Like, we should make sure this is behaving exactly how we want. And then I think we should ask Trove to do some testing too, just to make sure. But the sooner we do that, the better.
Yeah, the better. Yeah, it's on test already, so you might as well ask them now, right?
Okay.
To just play with this all. But it would be interesting to see both directions, right? So they supply from Alma, and then they set that field. And now we should be able to see that field in reshare, and maybe even it's going to create like a cost condition. If maybe not, I don't know, like Jason, is the mere presence of that offered cost field sufficient? No, it's got to have that magic notification before it's considered a condition, right?
Yeah, the offered cost field is not, it's just used in combination with it.
But if it's set on a message, on any message, are you gonna update the max cost field based on that, or only if it's part of the condition?
Only if it's part of the condition. It's updated when you accept the condition.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so yeah, I don't know. I still kind of think we should just take the latest accepted condition and put that into delivery cost at the end when it gets shipped out.
Well, I mean, you know, if it's not part of the launch message in Alma, I don't think it makes any difference, to be honest. Like, the way, let's see what Mallory confirms, but if that's the way it works, like we just discussed, I don't think we should bother, to be honest.
We can
just transfer that over. I mean, it's not gonna register in reshare though with this delivery cost. With this offered cost, I'm just thinking if well, I don't know if that's correct, Jason, to be honest, because reshare has those two different modes of setting conditions, right? There is this first, like you can supply with condition. So when you get a request, you can just click will supply or whatever that button is, right? And then you can actually specify a condition. And I think that gets sent as a message that is followed by another message. So it must be registering those field values, even if that magic notification, because that magic notification is not part of that initial message. You see what I'm saying? It's like split into there's the expect to supply or will supply message that carries the initial condition, and then there's like an empty notification with that magic note. So there must be something that already considers the values of those fields during the first message. Otherwise, it wouldn't show it. We can just test it. I think that's probably the easiest. I'm actually curious what's going to happen with this. So
you can just look.
Yeah. But we cannot really test it easily ourselves, because that all that behavior only kicks in with Alma as the supplier.
Great. But I can just look after this call with the idea of, okay, what happens if you have an offered cost that has no condition associated with it, and then just read through it and see where that goes.
Yeah, take a look, because I think that I even captured that this behavior somewhere on the ticket, because I was looking at the messages get sent back and forth. I may be able to take it out, but I think the first message doesn't get sent with any magic notes. But yeah. So if you can take a look, that would be nice. And I think for the inverse situation, that's going to work now, actually. Which should be okay, actually. So like what I'm thinking, Mallory, like the main outcome of this is that when you actually supply from your reshare, that delivery cost should get automatically updated.
Oh yeah, that would be good, I think, for them. Because then
I think
they don't
that's
have
what's
to...
gonna happen. Yeah, I think that's what's gonna happen. But yeah, test it so they don't have to put it manually. But the other way around, when you supply from Alma, it's 50-50. I'm not sure if it's gonna get registered and reshare. Maybe not. We can probably fix it, but Jason's still looking, we need to test it basically.
Okay. Yeah, I will try to test, and I will also ask them to go ahead and test. You said it's already on Trove test, it's on dev and test. So,
Okay. There is one more issue that I created today, this morning, and I spent almost the entire day with this fucking
this
thing.
One
it drives me crazy. Yeah. So I tagged you, on that Trove prods code exceptions, unhandled exceptions channel, where we see all those errors from the from the broker and from all of us. And there is a bunch of warnings from the broker, and I was looking at some, and some of those could be, as you say, because we don't get a lot of information, right? So like some of them could be because it's like a knock that is not registered for the thing, but some in some cases you can actually see, I think I sent you two examples, when the behavior is kind of strange. So like they might send some notifications either before item gets shipped and after item gets shipped, and in some cases even after the transaction is completed. So like those notification messages can essentially come at any point. And there is an issue with this protocol. It's like this notification handling is actually pretty broken in ISO 8266. And that's because whenever you have a message from the supplier, that message needs to have a status field. Status is that state that is communicated, like what's the state on the supplier? So it could be, unfilled, loans, completed, whatever, right? And that status is something that has certain transition, you could say, associated with it. So like we always assume that this transition is going to happen forwards rather than backwards. And both reshare and Alma are broken when it comes to notifications. And basically for that reason, that there's really no good support for that. So like what Alma does is that it keeps that field empty, which is invalid ISO 8266. So like when they want to send a notification, there's going to be an empty status field. And that's just not valid according to the schema. That field must be set. Well, it's... it's kind of a limitation of the protocol, but that's the way it is. So they break the protocol, and what we do in that case, we fail that message. And that's pretty bad, because a lot of those notifications that I see are things like, hey, you had this item for too long, it's overdue, please ship it back. And that message never gets delivered, right? Because we just fail it. So that's one case for Alma, where we kind of need to deal with a situation where there could be a notification, but it can be any message basically. I mean, we cannot assume it's notification, but from what I have seen, it's only notifications where that status is empty. And then there's reshare, which produces a valid ISO 8266 message, for a notification, but it's illogical. So like when it sends a notification message, it's going to hard code that status. And no matter when that notification is sent, you know, if it's sent prior to launch or after shipping or after completion, like it doesn't matter. It will always have the same status, which is request received. It's probably a hack that just somebody did to kind of get out of that situation. And the question is what we should do about this. So I was thinking a little bit about this, and I started fixing this. So the proper behavior, the way I understand it, is that no matter what type of message we send, notification or the status change message, like it doesn't matter what message we send, the status field should always be set to the last status on the peer. Right. So if we are sending notification message and we are already in the launch state, like we've already shipped the item, we just repeat that state. So every notification message should have a launch state. If we have already received it back and we completed the transaction and then we're sending another notification, then every notification message from that point on should have the loan completed state and so forth, right? So it should essentially repeat the state. So that status field is basically like the last status on the supplier. If it's changed, then the message should carry that new changed status. But if it remains the same, it should just repeat it. So I essentially tried to get in that situation with the broker, and I have some code that does it. So it's essentially going to be smart, tries to be smart a little bit and look at the messages coming in and remember like the previous status and see if the message should update that status or not. If not, then it's going to keep the old one on and forward that over. Unfortunately, I think that we might have some problems with both Alma and Richard with this behavior. So we'll need to test this. I don't know exactly whether that's going to break or not, but that's a major departure from what we had already. Another solution that I started thinking about is that we don't do any of that, but we essentially just hack it so that we generate messages that those systems are known to work with, right? So for Alma, it would be a broken message where the status field is empty. For Richard, we would always set the status to request received for notification messages. Something like that, right? The problem is that we have to do it differently for different peers because they're all broken in different ways. So long story short, the code that I have right now is essentially a code that I think does it correct according to the intention and the protocol. But we need to test it. We need to test whether that's going to work. And that's going to be fun because, yeah, again, we need to test it with Alma and so forth. So maybe I'll get it deployed on Stas and then we plan some meeting with Alma. I don't know.
I guess like the whole thing is already treating reshare specially because reshare's got its own non-standard nonsense, and it's already treating Alma specially because Alma has its own quirks. So it would just be another example of everything else. So.
Well, it does. That's true. But so far, all the changes were kind of stateless, you could say. So we're doing a lot of rewrites when it comes to those messages being sent to Alma, and also we're patching messages that are being sent to Reshare. But it's usually, hey, you know, let's fix up that field because it uses some foreign values, or let's transfer that field to another field, or let's fix up that status change, that reason for message because it does something stupid there, you know, stuff like that, right? In this case, it's slightly different. And I'm just concerned about doing that because I don't know if we ever get, I guess we would have to test it first, right? I mean, because we can always do this. I mean, we can always just hard code. And that's a simpler solution, actually, than the one that I have right now. But we can always hard code the status to something fixed. Notifications. Now I don't know whether that solution is gonna be sufficient, because I don't know whether there are other cases where Alma is just going to omit the status if it, if it does not feel like it needs to be set. And same goes for Richard, right? So so it's kind of tough. I mean, I'm kind of torn, between what we should do about this. But it is an issue. I mean, I can already see that it fucks up the communication in a couple of different cases.
I thought we were friends with Clarivate and ish, and that they kind of wanted this to interoperate properly. Like, why don't we have better communication there? That's kind of bizarre.
Well, but we would have to fix it ourselves. I'm sorry, Tori. We would have to fix it ourselves, right? I mean, it's hard to point fingers at them and say, "Hey, you guys do it wrong."
But I mean, like the part where we don't have access to Alma and whatever else to test.
Oh, that part. Yeah.
If they want, like, they want it to be compatible, right? So.
It would certainly help if they attached any details to that error. It would just make our life so much easier, right? So maybe that's what we should push on, because there is actually some section in that error response that can provide some more information. And we actually do.
How often
this,
do
right?
we reach out to them?
Well, they've got like a couple different avenues. Like we had been kind of in regular communication with Moshe and Katie when they were committed to the initial setup, but at this point, like, we're going through like their normal like submitting cases and like avenue, like the reason that they don't expose the fee that we send in a reshare request is like we don't know when that's going to get fixed. Like, and a lot of the stuff that we need them to do for like conditions and the fees like is getting put on their roadmap for like January. So I don't think they'll be able to fix anything like on the fly the way that we do.
Because they operate like sane people.
Well, I guess it's just a strange sort of arrangement that we have with Downward. Sort of Alan seems to be the sort of the proxy guy through which we kind of try to get some stuff fixed. I don't know, Mallory, if there's a better solution, because it does seem to me like they've done nothing so far. So maybe getting some more details into those errors, that would be something that we could actually benefit from. That shouldn't be that hard. I feel like that could be maybe an easy thing for them to do, and we benefit greatly from that, because we don't have to ask them every time something goes wrong. Let's maybe put that on the agenda, because like I can imagine that having them fix that empty status field, that's going to be a nightmare, especially because the protocol doesn't seem to support that very well, right? It's kind of dumb, this protocol, really. I mean, it's fucking idiotic.
Well, what it's going to turn out, though, Jakob, is the Crosslink broker is actually going to be the only way the standard can be used as a standard, because of all these hacks to interoperate.
Yeah, and you know what? I was just like, when I was explaining this behavior to you guys, what I'm actually think I'm going to do with the status thing is that I'm going to do both things, actually. So I'm going to fix that status handling, like add some logic to the broker so it tries to kind of validate that status, tries to guess the status based on the previous statuses that it's seen. So that we have, like, on the transaction level, we have the status that we think we should have. Or we, like, the best guess about the status that the supplier has. And then the shims are actually executed on the in the rendering phase. So the, all the shims are executed basically when the message gets rendered and sent. At that point, we can do any overwrites we want. So,
right. So that will be easy if we actually fix something later that we can gracefully adapt to. Hey, it supports it properly now. We can just turn that nonsense off. And
exactly. Exactly. I think that's probably the best approach because we've been trying hard so far to make sure that what we have kind of like the state internally is logical. You know, it's got like, it's got validation on the input and some fixes on the input so that what we have in the database makes certain sense. And then all the hacky behavior is kind of like on the leaves of the, on the edges of the application, right? So,
yeah.
So I think that's probably the best approach. So that's how I'm going to do it. But I'm going to do it in two stages, Mallory. So first thing I'm going to commit is something that we, where I just fix it, right? And I send the status to both peers that makes sense. We can do a little bit of testing with Richard, see if that breaks. Maybe not. Maybe Richard just doesn't give a shit. That would be my assumption, right? I mean, my assumption is that when it gets notification, it doesn't even bother with the status. So like we can put the correct value in that status field because it's just not gonna care. But the question is whether Alma is gonna be the same. I doubt it because we've seen in the past where Alma is very picky when it comes to like changing anything in that message. But that we can easily fix in the shim. So we can have like a shim which looks, hey, is this a notification message? Then just strip the status and produce an invalid message. Okay. So let's do it in two steps. I'm gonna commit the sort of fix now. I'll get that deployed on test. And then let's do some testing with this. So I don't know if you can reach out to Alan. So there is a couple of things we need to test already, like all the cost changes plus the status field handling.
I have two questions about this. One is we can't message Alma when it's in a loaned or copy completed state. So I think we'll get errors from them anytime that a reshare tenant tries to contact a closed request from Alma. Does that make sense? Like they don't have like messaging when a request is in a terminal state. So
that's
if
okay.
They
send, then they,
yeah,
then,
okay.
They just won't send it, right? So that's nice. Yeah. I mean, if they don't have it, that's fine. But we do have it, right?
Yeah,
we can always pop up a request and start messaging even when the stuff is closed.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I just wanted to ask is, I don't like, I think for reporting we're like, I think we're using the, I'd have to ask Julie, but I think we're using the loaned field as like a primary like a primary field or a primary status. And so if we default to sending that multiple times for the same request, I think that might complicate things, but I don't know what this loan completed, like, would it, are you saying like if they did do more actions on a request that's already closed, that it would be in, it would show up with this loan completed instead? Which would be fine because then it wouldn't impact like how many loaned messages there were per request.
If we're counting the loan completed, then it would be a problem, I think.
Is this supposed to be copy completed? Like, or are
it's different, right? I mean, depending on the service type, it's either loan completed or copy completed.
Okay. Yeah,
but
I don't do any of the reporting, so maybe I should just not be worried about this. I'm not sure.
Well, maybe that would be kind of surprising if they did look at the number of those messages. So the thing is, right? I mean, if we have a transaction, mm-hmm.
there should really be, like, if their reporting code expects that there's only one event with loan completed, then if they complete a transaction, complete a request, and then they start messaging, then that would throw it off. But I would be surprised if that was the case. I mean, that would be done. Why would they do it? I mean, it's basically, if there's any loan completed on the transaction, they should just consider it completed, to be honest. And I don't think she looks at the event on the, because there are two things, right? So we've got this transaction level fields, called less supplier status. And then we have individual events, which get collected under the whole transaction, right? I think she's looking at the less supplier status.
Okay,
that's what she
okay,
must be
yeah.
looking at, right? So like she's, so that, and that is a single field. So it doesn't even matter whether that gets updated multiple times, because she's just looking whether it reached that value. So I think that should be fine. I mean, that would be not the most natural way, you know, for like, let's, what we are supposed to check with her anyway. I don't know if she shared that report. It's best if we just look at that SQL, but I think that should be fine. What's going to be different though, right? I mean, when you look at the event log, right now, I should confirm that, but I think I did, but I'm not 100% sure. Maybe it would be best to check it. Like normally, the reason why we don't see that often is that normally you're going to send messages back and forth before that thing gets shipped. You're going to send those notification messages with conditionals and so forth, right? So like most of them will be like that. And we were just hard coding them because Reacher always returns them with a status equals request received. Nalma doesn't like it. We were patching this up to will supply in the broker. But then this patching breaks when you send that message after the shipment has been done, or even after the completion has been done. So it's going to patch it up to will supply, and Alma gets freaked out because it's like, how are you, like, why are you sending me will supply if I already seen a loan message? Stuff like that. You see what I'm saying? So like,
yeah.
So there are two ways, right? Let's send the correct status. So if it's loaned, it's been already loaned, then it should be loaned. It's been already loan completed, then it should be loan completed, and so forth. So like, don't change that status back. Don't transition it back during that notification message, because that's freaking out. That's one solution, which I have implemented so far. Or the other solution is keep it empty. That makes the message invalid according to ISO 18.6.6, but Alma seems to like it, actually, you know, that when the field is empty, it just ignores it. But as I said, I think we can do both, right? So we'll fix it in the broker. So like when you look at the transaction and the event block, you actually can make sense of it and you see, okay, so that message that arrived from Reacher, it had this request received status, then the broker has patched it over to whatever the proper status should be, like loan or loan completed or will supply maybe if it was before shipments. And then when the message was sent out to Alma, the shim is going to patch it again, right? And then remove that field if the field causes problems. So it's going to be a bit more involved solution, but I think at the end of the day, we'll also understand what's going on. So you'll be able to see it, look at that event log, and you'll be able to tell, hey, because you can see those messages as they come in and go out, right? You've got this incoming message and outgoing message section. So you can actually see when the message is different, when there will be some changes made to it.
Okay. Yeah, I think, like you said, we'll just have to heavily test the.
So I'll push it on dev first, because that's where I can test with Reacher. But then maybe we should kind of synchronize when we push this to test, because I wouldn't want to mess up your. Like if you're gonna meet with Alan or Charles gonna test, it might potentially mess it up, and they won't be able to test the cost stuff.
Yeah, I think that's right. Like, if we should probably try to complete one of the tests first, and then at least with them, because I don't know how much testing resources they'll have. There. Oh, by the way, this is another thing. Like the Trove like project team, the Jang and Deanna and that whole crew. Like they're transitioning off of the project at this point, and we're getting like a different support team to do like the business as usual. So we're not gonna have like the same exact like availability of their staff, but it's possible that Caval might be able to like step in there. But I just wanted to bring that up while we're talking about all the how their project's ending from their perspective.
Yeah.
I'm talking with them this evening though, so I'll see if they can continue to help test some of these things.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Just as a heads up, I have a 10 o'clock that I have to go to, so I just wanted to mention that somebody else might have to share screen if we if it gets close to 10. So, Jakob, was that all you wanted to talk about? Sorry.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's just something that I've been struggling with. You know, it's in general, I guess we should be quite happy that those guys really have very low expectations about the quality of the service they're getting, because we have shit all of those errors. If you look at that channel, right? I mean, the we still, so Wayne and Jason, they've been working to get some of those exceptions dealt with. For the most part, it's not something that the customer has seen, but we actually started seeing some errors in the broker when it was trying to send messages to other us, and that would impact the service. But from what I can tell, there was very little of those cases. And now with the new configuration, sort of more replica from other us, more memory for the database, larger database pool. At least we have dealt with those SQL exceptions, right? So we're not getting those SQL exceptions anymore, at least for now. We'll see how it's going to look sooner, for the next couple of days. But we're still getting the socket timeout exceptions. And if it really breaks the email delivery, then we haven't fixed that problem yet. So that's something I think you had an idea, Mallory, how to test this. I think it would be good to test. But that's also something that we still need to resolve. So I don't know what more can be done, whether Jason, you can work more with Wayne to keep on digging. I guess I would like to have a complete understanding of what goes wrong, if there's anything we can do about this in the code.
Well, there's an issue with Okapi that we've just learned in that DM thread with you, me, Ian, Wayne, and Adam, where it turns out Okapi has a hard-coded limit of 1,000 sockets, because sometimes systems had a file descriptor limit at 1024 that they couldn't do anything about. And so Adam just had this hard-coded limit in Okapi. But apparently the snapshot version now has that configurable. And of course, we can usually configure that on most systems that are anything modern. So we should be able to move that something higher.
And that would be sort of natural, right? Because I kind of actually like that you guys are looking into this, because I could not correlate any of those sockets. So I didn't do much of digging, but I think I looked at CloudWatch logs 2 days ago, and I could not correlate any of those socket timeout exceptions with some problems in ModEmail. So I felt like your analysis of, hey, ModEmail just breaks under loads, just something is not correct there. But that would explain it, right? And I think we've already chatted about this a little bit, that maybe the issue is not in ModEmail, but
but because all the traffic goes through Okapi, something breaks in Okapi sooner. And that would be actually more natural. So that's actually pretty good news, because we can have him lift that limit. Maybe he's already have actually, because that Okapi version that he's released that allowed to configure both the system connection limit and the standards incoming connection limits.
Yeah, he said it's configurable in the snapshot Okapi.
Yeah, exactly. So we can have Wayne put that snapshot Okapi back on dev and test, but not bring the limits down as we sort of initially intended, but actually bring it up. So like totally the inverse we were trying to do, which is kind of interesting, but hey, I guess that's the way it is. So that's actually pretty good. So we should try that.
But we should still fix the firing of the timers in an insane burst, because that's just brutal, unnecessary.
Yeah. That is true. And I talked to him about this, but I also did not like the solution with this sort of hard limits. Because I would like to see some jitter when it sends connections out.
That'd be great. That kind of array limit.
Yeah. So I think that there's still place for that functionality that he can work on. But actually, to get rid of those socket exceptions, like if your thinking is correct now, and we're actually hitting an FD limit in Okapi, that would be nice. So let's try that. So actually, Adam doesn't need to do anything now. We'll just have Wayne deploy that snapshot version that he removed actually from test and dev, and configure it with a higher limit.
Right, but the thing is, would that actually be a socket timeout though? Because it's enforcing the limit itself. It would probably just explicitly send a 500 or something, or it would just close the connection. Like, it wouldn't be at the TCP level, would it?
Well, that's a question, right? Because it, I just find it weird that the issue, the exception is called socket timeout exception. Maybe it's because it's waiting in the. Yeah, maybe that's why. Because I think he told me that this behavior of that that pool was very strange, right? So rather than the pool give you an exception, hey, I can't get a connection because everything's busy, it would wait pretty much forever. It would just block and wait. So that's likely actually that we are getting this timeout exception, and that's because, you know, the whole system is the system is async, right? So like waiting is cheap, and usually the like everything is done like this, so it just waits, and then probably at some point it can wait any longer, and then we get the timeouts. So I mean that would help, but we still need to test it, and it's easy to test. You can just install it and beef that limit up. We can see. So that's okay. So that's good news. And then I would still think we need to look at some smart way of handling those timers.
So it turns out he had done the script for mod email to spread the timers out, and he offered to do it for mod RS. And I don't know, maybe we should take him up on that, because that would at least rule out or address, either it fixes it because it wasn't the issue of the timer burst, or it rules that out. Either way, that gets us further along sooner and stops non-returnables from just being lost.
You know, what's going to happen, right, is that once we remove one limit, something else will start breaking, because we'll suddenly have, you know, we'll allow for
That's what I'm saying. It's like, great. Well, if Ian puts that in place, then it's no longer coming in 400 connections almost simultaneously.
Yeah,
and that's going to change the situation, I think, a fair bit. And that will probably do more to help this. Because, yeah, like you say, there's probably a lot of things that are unhappy with having that all happen at once. And so everyone we fix, we find a different one, as you say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of the root cause.
Yeah, I just you know, I think that's okay. And as a short-term solution, if he's got something already, I think that's fine. But I want a long-term solution.
Oh yeah, of
because
course.
We should
fix Okapi. Like, it's a problem with Okapi that the way it handles timers is to like massively DOS the service with it.
Yeah, plus the issue is that we just keep on adding those deployment hacks and we forget about them, we don't document them, and then we are solving same problems over and over again. I mean, I just can't imagine that this is a new issue. I mean, with this fucking timers, it must have been something that they, you know, our DevOps guys have been dealing with for ages now. So yeah, so that's what drives me crazy about this, right? And because we're all wasting time figuring out what goes wrong and then actually putting some workarounds in.
Because everything's always on fire, so we never have time to go back and tidy up.
No, I don't think
or
so.
Or we act like
think
it.
Think so. Yeah, I don't
we
think
act
anything
like
is
it.
On fire. I think it's just the mindset to live. Let's just patch it. Okay, so yeah, so but that's good. That's good. So it's actually good news. So I'm really happy how it worked, Jason. So I think it's good that you've been kind of working with Wayne on that and giving some
but
ideas.
But we still don't know. We still don't know.
Well,
right?
We still don't know, but we're getting closer, and I actually like that we're at least trying to investigate and think about this and test different options and not just kind of, you know, put some additional, you know, workarounds in and make the whole thing cost even more by, you know, over provisioning,
yeah.
Which seems to be our
it's
only
actually
solution.
It's actually the case that we can probably, after all of the dust has settled on this, this might actually let us turn down some of the provisioning on a lot of Folio systems, because this is probably responsible for a lot of the worst case scenarios.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Okay. So looks like Wayne is on it, and then Valerie had to drop. I don't know. Oh no, she's still here, guys.
Yeah, I gotta go. So I just wanted to stop sharing. Sorry. thank you.
Okay. Cool. Thanks, Mallory.
I've also got
was
a 10 o'clock.
Yeah, and I need to drop. Anything from your card?
I had one question that unfortunately I wanted Mallory in the conversation. But we had this question about I found the issue. It is 176, right, where we have when we have a request that is not able to resend, like if it fails because like a network error, and then for whatever reason it's not able to proceed. The only way for them to actually cancel that request was to go ahead and like manually close it. And I guess the question was, is there anything wrong with them having to do that? You know, like, is that the wrong, you know, I guess there was a question.
Yeah, we talked about this on Tuesday. That seems like the right thing for that situation, because that's
right.
Not a state that normally should be able to have cancels. It's sort of there's a network error, it's messed up. That's what the manual cancel is for. Those
so
occasional
should we
edge cases.
This is like a do not fix then thing, just like say that's.
I would, yeah. I think that's the conclusion we came to.
All right. Well, I will chase that Mallory then and just double check.
Shoot her a message.
Issue. Yeah, because she had some. I guess she wanted to just double check that was going to be okay. But you know, sound. I checked the code and everything seems like it's doing what it ought to be doing. You know, so you know, it's gotten to this state where it's stuck. You know, and it's. Seems like manual close is why that's there, you know, but yeah, that was the only thing that I had. So I'll just double check with her that there's no that we can just go ahead and just say we're just gonna leave this one alone.
All right, sounds good. Okay, guys, thank you so much. So
right.
Yeah, Jason, try to keep an eye on this issue also with the socket timeout. So
I'll be in those conversations and I'll answer those two questions you had. And I've got a thing going with Mallory as well on Another issue.
Okay. All right, guys. Have a good one. Talk to you
All right.
soon.
Thanks all.